Welcome to the Self-Publishing School Podcast. This is the podcast to listen to if you're an aspiring writer or an author who wants to be more successful. On this show, you'll learn how to write and launch a book successfully, all from the top authors and people just like you who are doing it at the highest level. I'm your host, Chandler Volt, the founder of Self-Publishing School, the author of the book called Published, and the CEO of selfpublishing.com. For free training on how to publish a book that sells 10,000 copies, go to selfpublishing.com/free training. Hey, Chandler Bolt here, and joining me today is Bo Eason. Bo Eason is a former NFL standout, acclaimed Broadway playwright and performer, and an international presence and story coach. Bo is dedicated to helping others tap into their personal story or into the power of their personal story to become effective and persuasive communicators. He's the author of the book, There's No Plan B for Your A Game, Be the Best in the World at What You Do. Today, we're going to be talking about how he wrote and published this book, how he's using this book to grow his business, like kind of all those things. So, Bo, welcome. Great to have you here.
Chandler, thanks for having me. This is going to be fun.
So, first and foremost, why write this book? Like, how does this fit in with your goals, with your business? Like, why a book?
I was forced into it. I never really considered writing a book. I just didn't. I was more of a, performer. And then, every time I performed, it seemed like people came up and said, "Hey, that's a play. Hey, that's a book. Hey, that's a screenplay." So funny enough, I just haven't considered myself as a writer, my whole life. But I seem to write a lot, which is so funny. And, and I've written everything from, screenplays to, to the book, to my play. And so I actually love it, but the would-be writers and writers who are on the podcast, you know how you have that love-hate relationship with writing. You're just, facing that blank page every day. It's like you're creating into a void. And so I was on stage, once, and I was doing, a speech or training people. And a client, somebody that we know, that you and I both know, JJ Virgin, who's written a bunch of books, came up to me afterwards. And she goes, "Hey, that you should write a book." And I'm like, "Well, I don't even know how. I don't know why. I don't know why. I didn't know if they got paid or not. I didn't know anything about it." And she goes, "I want you to meet my agent." And that's how I met Celeste Fine, who, I talked to on the phone. And she was funny. She didn't, I've had plenty of agents in my life, but never one like this. Like, she seemed to get me where other people, maybe I doubted whether they did or not. And she seemed to get, she goes, "Bo," because I always, "Chandler, I talk about, what it takes to be the best. That's always kind of been my quest since I was a little boy." And she goes, "Bo, I think there's a group of people out there, potential readers, that actually go to bed wondering if they could be world-class or wondering if they could be the best at something, or wondering if they could win a gold medal. And I think that's a book based on what I saw you talking about on stage." And so we went into it, we started writing and developing and finding the chapters. And I basically write, and this goes for plays, screenplays, the book, I write physically. Like, I write standing up and moving. And a lot of, like, I wrote my play while training for a marathon. So I was training for these marathons. So I had these 10 mile runs that I had to run to get ready for the marathon. And when you're running that far, you lose your mind, right? You're just like crazy and you don't want to go on. You can't take another step. So your mind starts to relax. And then I started thinking of this story, of this play. And as it turns out, that's actually my process of how I write. I write. So if you ever see me and I'm in really good shape, you know that I'm writing something.
No way.
Isn't that crazy?
Are you speaking it? Like, are you transcribing this while you're running? Are you just stewing on the story and then kind of when you get back, crystallizing it through typing it out? Like, how are you doing that?
Yeah, I run or get on a treadmill or a stationary bike or a hike, whatever it is. I don't transcribe it out there in real time. Yeah. I find that that stops me. That kind of makes me self-conscious.
Oh, yeah.
I've really got to like expend myself a little bit, like get myself to where I'm kind of, I can't control my, the thoughts. And once I'm there, especially if I run fast, I get some kind of freedom. And I don't know if that's from my athletic background or what it is, but I start to get this permission and freedom to, you know, be a sucky writer, you know? So that's really helped me. And then when I get back to the car, like wherever I'm running or whatever, when I get back to the car is usually when I just start writing down notes or chapters or ideas or themes. Mm-hmm. And that's how it all started. And it, I continue to use that all these years later. But also Chandler, you know, when the play became a hit and in New York and it got bought as a movie, right? So I wrote one play in my whole life, a one man show. So that got bought as a movie and check this out. It's so funny. So, people like celebrities and well-known Hollywood people would come to the play just thinking they're coming to a play, you know, and they're sitting right there in the audience. Like I remember one night, Leonardo DiCaprio's right there and Tobey Maguire's right there. And Tom Cruise is right there. It was like a who's who. Well, right after the show, they come backstage, right? So DiCaprio and Tobey Maguire come backstage and they say, hey, we like this story. Will you write us a screenplay? And I go, well, you know, I don't know how to write a, I don't write screenplays. Mm. And they say, well, we think you do. Mm. And then they tell me how much you get paid to write a screenplay. I go, yeah, maybe I can do that.
Turns out I write screenplays.
And so to sum that story all up, it's funny. People, I've been hired as a writer in all these different like screenplays and plays and movies and books, but I've never considered myself really a writer. But what I can do is like learn pretty fast.
Yeah.
So, for example, my play got bought by Frank Darabont. Frank Darabont wrote The Shawshank Redemption, The Green Mile, Saving Private Ryan, The Walking Dead. So he bought it to direct.
How did you do that?
I did the show. He's in the audience. Yeah. Comes up afterwards. This is my life story. Comes up afterwards, goes, hey, man, I want to make this my next movie. And I go, that's cool. Who are you? And he goes, I'm Frank Darabont. I said, shit, you're Frank Darabont? Because I didn't know what he looked like.
Because
you never see directors or writers that much. And he goes, I'm Frank Darabont. I said, that's great. He goes, I want to direct it. You can write the screenplay. And I say to him, oh, really? Because I don't know how.
Yeah.
And he said, well, you wrote the play, didn't you? I go, well, I wrote the play, but I don't know how to write a movie. I don't even know, you know, the format of it. And he goes, well, I'm really good at that. I've been nominated for 12 Academy Awards, so I'll help you with that. So enough, he turned out to be my mentor as far as the screenplays went. I was just going to say, having a guy like that look over your shoulder, and you know how writers are, they're writers are, they're humble in a way that they know they can fail really easily. So his notes to me on, you know, a rookie writing a screenplay were very gentle, you know what I mean? And he says, and he told me like straight up, you can't do that, but you have to do this. And he also said this, I'll share this with the writers on the podcast. I think this is really critical if you ever are going to write a play or a screenplay. I'm not so sure it applies to books, but maybe it does. He had the screenplay, my screenplay, in his hand, right? And he would open it and he would go, "Do you see what I see, Bo?" And he goes, "I see a lot of black on this page. And I don't see a lot of white on the page." And he goes, "That's a mistake.
Because it's not dynamic."
Yeah. He says, because here's the reader of the script. So these would be Hollywood, you know, executives.
Yeah.
Turn the page, and what they're hoping they see is some white.
Yeah.
So that it's less, you know what I mean? So that it's not so dense. Do you ever get emails and you're like, they're so single spaced and jammed up that you're going, I can't read that. Yeah. But if it's spread out a little bit, you're like, "Oh, give me some breathing room." Well, thank you, writer.
Yeah.
I remember him telling me that.
When I think that there's a directly applicable implementation of that for books, which is shorter paragraphs. Shorter paragraphs means easier to read books. Easier to read books means more people actually finish the book. You know, when you're living in a world where 80% of books that get started don't get finished, you've got to make it frictionless. And so I think that's an easy takeaway, which is shorter paragraphs. I want to hop into this play and screenplay piece and just touch on that for a second as it relates to writing. So I noticed you had Stephen Pressfield endorsed your book. I've had him on the podcast, and I asked him a question that I want to ask you as well, which is, because, you know, he wrote screenplays and got one of his books turned into a movie. And the question I asked him, which I'd love to get your perspective on as well, is how did writing plays and screenplays impact or improve the way that you wrote your book?
I tell you what it did. The old Hollywood saying, which is, I made this mistake. I stepped in this bear trap 100 times before I actually listened to the mentors and coaches that I had, is they said, "Cut to the chase, get to the action." And I'm going, "I'm getting to it." And they go, "You're too late. If you're getting to it, you're late. Get to the action." And the reason that that saying became so famous or well-known is because of the old Westerns. Whenever the studio executive felt like the movie was going too slow and there was too much walking here and walking into the saloon and then the romantic scene, he said, "You got to get to a horse chase. You got to get on the back of a horse and run." That's why they call it "Cut to the Chase," because that's the action. And I kept telling them, "Be patient. The action's coming." And they just kept saying, "If it's coming, it's late." So, so that's
good.
That's a really great note that I always keep in mind. Like, is that sentence necessary? Here's another tip that I'll give you that I just thought of that Frank Darabont gave me. Now, mind you guys, this guy's one of the greatest screenwriters of all time. Mm-hmm. Very sweet guy. He said, "Bo, I'm just going to give you a general rule in screenwriting, and this probably is true for books. If you took a red pen and you crossed out every other sentence, it would be a better book. It would be a better movie." And I was like, that means a lot to me. Somebody gives me simple tasks like that, that lands on me. Like, I go, "Look, this dude obviously knows what the heck he's doing." Also, let me tell you one more thing I just thought of. This will help you guys. So when I would have these writing meetings with Frank, this was several years ago, 15 years ago. It was my wife and I, and we couldn't afford a babysitter at the time. So we had a baby, like she's 17 now, but she was this big. And we would take her to these writing meetings because we didn't have anybody to watch her. So Eloise, my 17-year-old daughter, now is crawling around the set of Paramount at a writing meeting, you know, over there with union guys who are smoking cigarettes, you know, and driving her around on golf carts. And we're meeting with Frank Darabont, and he's giving me notes on my latest pass of the screenplay. Well, at that same time, Chandler, you won't believe this, but at this time, he's writing a little movie called Indiana Jones. And it was,
oh my gosh,
it was the fourth Indiana Jones. And so his writing meetings are in the same room, right? Mm-hmm. With Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, and Harrison Ford, and Frank Darabont. So they're in the meeting. Then we would often meet right after they finished. So those guys would walk out. So you can imagine, and we got a baby.
Yeah.
And we're like, no one knows who we are, right? So those guys would leave. We would come into the writing meeting. Eloise would be crawling around. And Frank Darabont was so funny because what he was astounded by working with legends like Spielberg and Lucas and Harrison Ford, it wasn't that he was in awe of them. It wasn't like he was like, those guys are unbelievable. That's not what he said. Do you know what he said? Those guys come up with the worst ideas I've ever heard of.
Mm-hmm.
1,000 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get one.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, they come up, they're not afraid to fail. They're not afraid to, you know, what we call like sucky writing or sucky ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're legends. If you think about those three, because he was complaining that it took them a long time to get to the good stuff. Well, of course it does. These guys, the reason they're great is because they all these bad decisions, all these wrong choices revealed the right choice.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
That's great.
And so I didn't feel so in awe of them after that either. I just felt like I was only having 10 ideas and thinking I was bad at ideas or a bad writer.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not, like all of us on this podcast now, we're not. We just haven't given ourselves enough attempts.
Yeah, that's so great. And I can resonate. It's almost like those are the two parallels. It's like coming up with enough ideas to have good ones, but then also coming up with enough words to have a great book. I mean, it's kind of what you alluded to of removing every other word. I'm doing basically an updated and revised version of my most successful book of all time. And I'm in the middle of right now, you know, it went from 50,000 words to 85,000 words to then I think it's right at about 68,000. And I want to get it down to probably less than 65,000, but it's the same. It's just going through the draft saying, all right, what can I cut? What can I cut? What can I cut? Having my editor do the same thing, having a proofreader do the same thing where it's like, okay, how do I just ruthlessly cut this down? And cut to the chase and hop on some horses.
Cut to the chase. That's right.
That's awesome. Well, hey, let's switch gears to the launch of the book. How did you launch this book successfully as a first-time author? And then what sold the most copies?
Yeah, we did really well. I see, I was a rookie at books, so I didn't know the market. So we got help. My wife, Dawn, you know, she runs our company and she, you know, also produced the plays and the movies and that kind of stuff. She's really smart about that kind of stuff. And we hired a great marketing team and we just kind of just went for it. You know, I mean, we went for it and we got the book out there and we did all kinds of podcasts and do all kinds of, media hits and really went after it and did really well. Like we had, you know, 8 bestsellers lists and it was our first book and they seem to like the book a lot because we're still after, you know, a couple of years now, we're still selling a lot of copies and getting a lot of good feedback from people. And it's kind of spurring me to go, man, you know, what's the next thing? You know, how you're like, no, I only have one book in me, you know, but then a couple of years pass and all of a sudden you're starting to percolate again. And so we're thinking about that now. So it's funny. I don't know a lot about marketing. I wish we had my wife on here with us because she would say, we did this, we did this, we did that. All I know is I remember this marketing company that we hired, and just started getting, you know, out there doing all kinds of stuff, photo shoots and interviews and other people's lists, and doing that. So that's my marketing.
Don Sharp. Hey, Chandler Bolt here. I hope you're loving this episode so far. It's time to go from inspiration to implementation. All right, so if you've learned something, we want to help you implement what you've learned with your book. So what I want you to do right now is go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a publishing consultation with one of the experts on my team. We'll talk about your goals for your book, your dreams, your challenges, your next steps, and we'll start putting together a plan. All right, so go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a call with the team. Let's see how we can help with your book. It's time to implement. Do you remember what sold the most books? You think it was internal email lists? You think it was podcast interviews? You think it was something different?
Yeah.
You know, some of that stuff's kind of hard to track.
I know we have all that stuff. It's funny, you know, our business, the reason our marriage works really well is like we're complete opposites, right? Like one is brain dead when it comes to like, business stuff, and one, you know, is an artist and one's not, you know, so I can't remember. I mean, I can get you that information, but I honestly don't remember.
Yeah. But what would be your advice? Because I bet you 80% or more of the people listening to this right now resonate with that. So what of like, oh man, I feel like my genius is creating this thing. And then when it comes to the marketing, it's like,
yeah,
gosh, like it's not my sweet spot. I'd rather just create the thing, like whatever else. Like, what would be your advice to those folks on how they can kind of maximize the success of what they're doing?
I will say a couple of things I think are important about that. In fact, there's a section in the book. My wife's name is Dawn. So there's a section in my book, There's No Plan B for Your A Game, that is it's entitled Get a Dawn. So I say that to every client that I meet. I say that to everybody I meet. I go, you got to have a Dawn. You got to have a Dawn. And your Dawn could be a George. I don't know. But what Dawn represents to an artist, and not only for me, but for all the people that I work with, every artist, you know, that if you look at Hollywood, it's called show business. Mm. It's cut down the middle, right? And she's the business and I'm the show. And that's how our marriage has been, right? That's who we are naturally. So she provides a safety net for me to be a foolish artist, creative, fall on my face, make some mistakes, and then she's there to clean it up and say, go again, go give it another shot. Mm. I think that person in your life is critical. Yeah. It's almost like if you were a quarterback in the NFL, you know, and these guys, it's the highest level of sports. If you're the quarterback of an NFL franchise, they seem like they're kind of celebrity-ish. They're kind of good looking. They're kind of alone, right? But here's the deal. Do you know how many people are behind them? Do you know how many people are protecting them? Their lifeblood is based on who protects them. They're artists, quarterbacks. That's the position is an artist. I want you all you writers, to start thinking of yourself like that.
Yeah.
You're an artist. You need that business, you know, partner or whoever that's going to be. And there's plenty of people out there that play that position with such zeal, as much zeal as you play as an artist. They love it. They love the protection. They love to fight for somebody's dreams. That's what I would definitely have if I was you, 100%. And also, that goes across the board. Get a Dawn. And I have often, my wife's really a beautiful girl, but I often call her a grizzly bear, you know, right, with cubs. And you know how they are. They're violent and dangerous when it comes to my dreams and my kids' dreams. So that's how you kind of want to look for these people, because they are unbending. You know, like they will make that book or that screenplay happen because they will protect it and usher it all the way through.
And I don't, your thoughts? Yeah, good.
I don't necessarily want to do that,
Yeah.
But here's the other part of being an author, I think is a skill that I would have if I was you. I think we sold a lot of copies of my book because of my ability to share myself.
Yeah.
And share the book's themes, the content, the chapters, and to be able to tell a darn story. Because in our world anymore, Chandlers, you know, it's so, the trust level's so low right now. It's never been lower. Gallup does a poll every year since 1974. It has never been this low. We don't trust our own neighbors. So how do we trust this author of this book that we're supposed to buy, or this person that's going to help us or train us and inspire us with this, with these stories and these books? If you can get in front of them, like we are today, like our faces are here, we're either on stage or in front of a camera or on a podcast or on a webinar, and you're able to get in front of people and do what Chandler and I are doing right now, which is we're passionate about this art and this skill called writing. And to be able to express the highs and the lows of that, and why you wrote the book, and how much of your blood is on those pages. If you can do that, and here's how I do it. I share it really personal. So the more personal your story is, the more people it impacts. There's a saying, the more personal your story, the more universal it is. And often people in this day and age, they're making the mistake of saying this. This term has become popular, right? Yeah. It's not about me. Well, if it is a personal story, the more personal that story is, it actually gives permission to your audience to open themselves up. And that's where every human being wants to be. So if the author opens up their heart, so to speak, then the audience feels that opening and feels close to you. In fact, they feel like they are part of you. And so now you have the reader or the audience and the writer or the performer bridging together. Those are the greatest performances of all time. So if you want to sell a lot of books, you got to get this human body, which, you know, if you think about our bodies, this is the greatest physical instrument that God ever created in the world of expression. So you've got to sell that book. You've got to be out in front talking to him. Yes. Even a guy like Stephen Pressfield, you know, that dude is a writer's writer. He is a writer, and everybody loves him, but he was so reluctant to be in front of people. And now I'm so brave of him. You know, that dude has got some veteran chops. Yeah. And here he is fairly recently out in front of people.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And for those of you listening, that's a good podcast interview to check out, is the one I did with Stephen Pressfield. But we talked about it's like how in your 70s you're doing this, and the hunger and the passion and the going out in front, and not only continuing to write, but like you said, continuing to promote your books and to teach. Yep. And that's obviously what he's doing, coming on this podcast and other places like that. I want to kind of in the home stretch here, I want to pull out one or two concepts from the book that you feel like helped you write and publish the book successfully.
Something that's a content that's in the book that helped me create.
Exactly. Like one or two concepts that you teach in your book, right? That you would say, hey, this was fundamental to me actually being able to do the process of writing and publishing.
Yeah. There's a whole chapter on this in the book, and I call it a declaration. A lot of people use the word like goals or dreams. I use dreams sometimes. Goals doesn't really do that much for me. I use this word called declaration. And I've used it since I was a kid, because I was moved as a boy, as a 9-year-old kid. I had this dream of playing pro football, right? But I didn't know any pro football players, and I didn't know how to do that. So I wrote a declaration no different than the Declaration of Independence. And I still have it. It's over 50 years old now. And I followed that declaration, and all it did was declare that I was going to be the best at this position called safety, which is a position in football. And I followed that despite everyone saying, no, you're too little, you're too slow, you're too this, you're too that, including 350 colleges that said, yeah, we don't want you. And I just invited myself and kept true and loyal to my declaration. When I wrote the book, I just said, okay, I'm going to keep true to my declarations, because I've had 4 or 5 declarations in my lifetime, because it takes a long time for them to come true. I use this term, the best, in my declarations. I don't use, I want to write a book. I put my declaration, I want to write the best book ever. And I know that might sound conceited or cocky or whatever the word you want to use, but that turns me on. That wakes me up in the morning. Now, writing a book does not wake me up in the morning. I'm not going, woo, I'm writing a book. I'm like, if I can write a book where I can consolidate 50 years of what it takes to be the best at this thing called NFL football, at this thing called playwright, at this thing called stage performer, as this thing called speaker. If I can bring those things into existence, I want to be able to share that with other people so they feel liberated to go, you know what? I want to be the best in the world at a thing. And that's what the book is about. But it's the loyalty to the declaration rather than the loyalty that most of us have, which is to the news media or social media, or what the outside world is criticizing you about. We're loyal to what they say, but we're not loyal to what our declaration says. And so when you do this, if you follow the book, that's what it's about. When you do this, you find, and your kids will love this, and you'll love it for your grandkids too, you're no longer distracted. Because the game requires so much of you, because you're the one who stated you wanted to be the best in the world at this thing. Once that declaration is out there, now the game becomes big and there's no room in your life for distractions. That has helped me with the book, because, you know, when you're writing a book, it's so easy to go, you know what? Not today. But the loyalty, yeah, to the distraction of not only it being a book, but being the best book.
Yeah.
That moves the dial for me. If some of you are thinking about that, always up the stakes, because this is who we naturally are. So if you can prove to me, anybody on this call, on this podcast, if you can prove to me that this sentence ever came out of a 6 or a 7 or an 8-year-old kid's mouth, hey, mom, dad, I have this ultimate dream. I want to win the silver medal in the Olympics. That sentence has never been said. Isn't that crazy? That sentence has never been said. It's been said later, after you didn't win the gold and you won the silver, or you actually lost the gold and they gave you a silver. But our eternal way back and with Mother Nature, who we were, the genesis of who we are, is to be the best. And that's why you and me were born on the day of our conception, right? The reason we got conceived on that day, against 300 million to one odds that we would be the sperm that fertilized the egg, is because we won. We weren't, there's no medals for second place in the sperm count. Right? There's no second place in ribbons. So you and me, think about this. You and me are made this way. It's in our DNA to be number one, to be the gold medalist, to create the best. Then we're born into this world and everything that's coming at us is mediocrity. So then we settle for mediocrity. And I say, you know what? If I make a commitment to write a mediocre book, that book's never going to get written because I'm going to be distracted. It's never going to happen. But if I declare it's going to be the best book, that sucker's going to happen. Now, it may not be the best book, right? That's for other people to decide. Yeah. But that was the effort I put into it. And it kept me loyal to my own declaration instead of loyal to the world's and the culture's declarations, which are, let's promote mediocrity.
Yeah. And so you made a declaration to be the best and a declaration to get it done, which I think that's a big thing that a lot of people can take away too, is when you decide to write this book, one of the best first things that you can do is post a picture or something of you saying, hey, I'm going to write this book and it's going to be done by this date. Yeah. It's like the box that I sent you in the mail where there's that future author sign that we have. And it's like, my rough draft will be finished by X date. And we ask people to take a picture with it and then post it. Because then it's public accountability. But in your words, it's a declaration to finishing this thing.
That's
and
right.
So guys, that's awesome, Bo. And you can learn more about this in his book. There's no plan B for your A game. So Bo, what would kind of a couple final things here? What would be your parting piece of advice for folks who are just like you or the other Bos in the world who are thinking about writing their first book? So knowing what you know now, what would be your advice to those people?
Yeah, we all have this unique story. Now, to us, it doesn't seem too unique because we lived it. So it seems kind of mundane. It seems kind of regular. It is not. That is dramatic to other people who didn't live your life, right? So we all have this vision and this perspective that's valuable. And in fact, if you think about people who make a lot of money, they get paid for their perspective. Isn't that wild? They get paid on what they see and how they're able to communicate that. Well, so do you. So you're paid equivalent to the perspective that you're able to get out there. And no better way to, you know, get on a stage or get in front of a camera, talk about it, and then write it and get it out there and get it passed around to people. If you don't do it, no one else is going to. It's, you know, it's dead. It just dies. It dies with you. And I just always thought, like, wow, that's crazy. Why would I spend 50 years trying to be the best at something and then not share the principles of what it took to be the best at that thing? That's a valuable thing. And so's your life. And so is your track record. So don't, you know, and this is where, you know, like news media, social media always goes to mediocrity. They go, well, do we really need another book? No, we don't need another book from you idiots, you know, who write shitty books. We need somebody who's got a perspective and is in the real world grinding it out. That's what we need to hear from. So that would be, you know, first thing I would do. And then I would up the stakes and go, I want to win the gold medal, whatever the equivalency of that world-class gold medal, whatever it is, Super Bowl, because that requires all that you've got. So you got to play a way bigger game. You might be playing like a small game, and small games don't turn you on. They don't wake you up. They don't float your boat. So I want you alive, and that's risky, right? So you got to put yourself on the line and get out there and do it. And then you get out in front of people, you share who you are, you know, and those are the people who are, I'm telling you, we're walking into a new leadership model. And it is the people who can share the miles that they've run. You know, bloody noses and all. The more bloody noses, actually, the better. But you're not going to have anything to say if you attempt mediocrity. You just won't. You'll only have something to say if you attempt to go deeper and deeper and deeper each day. And that's what people are dying to hear. They're dying to be, aren't you just waiting for somebody to inspire you? Right? Like the whole world's waiting. Somebody, please, somebody step up and inspire me. Well, maybe that's you. Maybe that's you. So quit looking over your shoulder and look in the mirror and go, maybe it's me.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
I love that, Bo. Well, hey, man, this has been awesome. Where can people go to find out more about you, to buy your book, find out more about what you're up to, all that good stuff?
Yeah, go to boeasonbook.com. So it's my name, boeasonbook.com. And I'll send you a free guide, right, guys, that will give you the 7 steps to play a bigger game. Because here's the problem with not only us adults, but your kids. Whenever your kids are doing something that you don't want them to do, they're not playing a big enough game. If the game requires more of them, they won't be doing that stupid stuff you don't want them to be doing. There's no time for it. There's no space in their life for it. So it's a free guide. It's great. It has 7 ways to like have you play a bigger game. And once you play that big game, woo, now we get to see who you are, right? That's what we want. I want to see who you really are. And if it doesn't require enough of you, we're never going to see it.
Yeah. That's great. Well, guys, boeasonbook.com. It's a good site too. I was looking at it right before this interview, and good example for authors who are looking at a 2 bonuses for your book and a 2-step for those bonuses, which is something that we talk a lot about and teach about. So if you want to check out that at work too, you can see that at the site. It's pretty cool. So boeasonbook.com. Bo, appreciate you.
Thanks, Chandler. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. I know there's so many places that you could be spending your time. There's other podcasts that you could be listening to, YouTube channels that you could be watching. So thank you so much. It means the world. Now, I want you to do 3 things right now if you found this episode. All right. Number one, I don't know if you know this, but we've got a YouTube channel. It's a companion channel to this podcast. All the video versions of the episode are on the YouTube channel. So number one, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Number two, if you're listening to this podcast, wherever, whether this is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, number two, I want you to subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss a future episode. And then number three, this is probably the most important, leave a review on the podcast. All right. Reviews are super important and help the podcast get discovered by other people. So number three, leave a review on the podcast. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next episode. If you're on the fence about scheduling a publishing consultation call with my team, maybe you're not quite ready for that, I've got some free training that I think will be really helpful for you. All right, all you have to do is go to register to sign up. Go to selfpublishing.com/free training. When you do, you're also going to get a free digital copy of my new book, Published. And on that training, you're going to learn the next step, so how to implement with your book. So how to write, how to publish, how to launch successfully. So go to register right now at selfpublishing.com/free training. I'll see you there.